Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Long-time listeners of this program. In fact, for those of you who might be listening online, I still have a few folks up in the People's Republic of Wisconsin who listen, or maybe you listened across the country. I used to use this as my theme music for, I was going to say it's almost two decades. Well, it couldn't be two decades full, and I'll tell you why. And the reason I'm bringing it up today is this is R.L. Burnside, great Mississippi blues guy, died several years ago, and boy, he didn't. R.L. Burnside didn't even get into music until I think he was in his 50s, and he might have been in his 80s or 90s when he passed away. But this song is from The Sopranos, and The Sopranos is celebrating its 20th anniversary, believe it or not. And that wasn't, of course, the theme song from The Sopranos. That was just a song that was used. I told David Chase this, interviewed him many years ago, how much I love that song. I just love the whole vibe bit. In fact, when I used to use it as my intro music, that was the number one question that was asked on Twitter or email. Hey, what's that? You know, what's that music? And I always said R.L. Burnside. I think it's on Burnside on Burnside. That's the records, but also on the original Soprano soundtrack. There are a couple of them. But this is the theme, of course. Got yourself a gun. 20 years old today. I was watching an episode over the holidays because I'm just flipping around and I saw something and I was waiting for my wife to get ready. I think we were going out that night. I told my son, the 18-year-old who's home from Missouri, you got to watch The Sopranos. Because they're always binge-watching shows, many of which are bad shows. This would be one that I would highly recommend.
That's total crap. Who told you that?
Dad, I've lived in the house all my life. I've seen police come with warrants. I've seen you going out at 3 in the morning.
So you never seen Doc Cusimano go out at 3 in the morning on a call?
Did the Cusimano kids ever find $50,000 in Krugerrands and a 45 automatic while they were hunting for Easter eggs?
Wow, that is a very young Meadow, isn't it? Forget the, what was Meadow's name? Jamie... I got to look this. This thing, we got Google. You guys know it out there, right? Let's see here. That would be Jamie Lynn Sigler. Wow. Who is now, how old is she? Jamie Lynn Sigler. Don't see the birth date. But she was in it from the beginning as Tony Soprano's daughter. Just a great, great show. 20-year anniversary for The Sopranos. I am going to Hollyweird. Tomorrow, I'm going to miss the snow for the Critics' Choice Awards. Christian Toto from HollywoodandToto.com is going to help me handicap those awards at 4:20 this afternoon. But let me address the awards season from a different perspective, and that's Kevin Hart, who I feel badly for Kevin Hart because here's a guy just doing comedy, and if you look back at some of the things he said about gay people, it's automatically, if you talk about gay people, if you talk about women, if you talk about... transgender people. You can't do that in comedy. There's things that are off. If you want to make fun of old white guys, you're cool. Don't worry about that. But you can't do it for anyone else. And it's out of control. It really is. So Kevin Hart apologizes. You know, he has to pull out of the Oscar host gig. Apologizes more. If you look at some of the things or if you listen to some of the things he said about gay people in his bit, it was a comedy bit. It was funny. I bet you that a majority of gay people probably even laughed at it. I was talking to my friend. I'm going out to visit a friend of mine out in L.A. who is a guy that I've known for 3.5 decades, one of my best friends on the planet. He's gay. And I said to him the other night, I said, you got to get your, we joke about these things. I said, you and Ellen need to get your gays in order because Ellen gets crap because she defends Kevin Hart on her show a week ago. And it doesn't matter in 2019 how many times you say you're sorry. It doesn't matter if it's just even an innocuous mistake. You know, we got the example of that guy in, Dave, where was the weather guy? He was in New York, wasn't he? Who said Martin Luther Coon, but he just slipped and he gets fired for it. In fact, I even have, where's the Craig Melvin bite? I want to play that. There's a black guy on the Today Show, Craig Melvin, who even saw the, you know, the error in this. This is the original Jeremy Kappel.
Martin Luther King Jr. Park.
So he slipped over his word, right?
Martin Luther King Jr.
This is Craig Melvin on the Today Show.
Well, anyone who's done this, yeah, as long as we've done it, on air, you flub. You make mistakes.
Yeah.
It would seem as if the guy made a genuine mistake.
Yeah, he made a genuine mistake, but he got fired because the mayor of that town complained about it. And then the news director, the general manager of the station, completely caved and went wimpy. And this poor guy, Jeremy Capel, his career is over what likely was just a slip of the tongue. And even a black guy like Craig Melvin is honest enough to say, look, in this business, you say things all the time. I can't even imagine how many things might sound like something else. But whenever I say Martin Luther King from now on, I'm going to have to overemphasize it. But back to Kevin Hart. He's on Colbert last night. He's asked about this ad nauseum. Listen to Colbert. Colbert seems so surprised that, you know, that he just kind of wants to let this thing go, and that I think Stephen Colbert feels like he hasn't made amends at this point.
Is there anything about the way you've handled this situation over the last month that you would go back and change if you had a time machine?
No, I wouldn't change anything.
Really?
No.
Really?
No.
Because you didn't apologize at first, and then later you apologized.
Well, you know what? You should have apologized at first. And he kind of got forced into apologizing, unfortunately. But look, Colbert's like, oh, man, you know, you should have apologized. What's wrong with you?
Right now, right? This is me.
Yes.
I'm over it. I'm just over it. It's an onion. It's onion. So no matter how many times you keep peeling it, it's just endless. If you keep peeling it, it just doesn't stop. There is no end to it. Like, I apologize again. I said I apologized before. I apologize after that apology. It just keeps going. And then every headline is, you apologize. He apologized again. Yeah. He just apologized. And I'm like, I'm done. I did it. I'm over it. There is no more that I can do.
Yeah, there is no more that he can do. And how helpless must you be? I think a lot of people are going to be in this condition. Thankfully, most people aren't public figures. But if you say something even at the workplace that may have been a joke or not intended as hateful and bigoted and homophobic, doesn't matter. You're hateful, bigoted, and homophobic. Kevin Hart will be for the rest of his life, even though he apologized.
You can continue to live to please others, or you can have a position when you know that you've literally done what you can to try to please. At that moment, when you know that you've given your all to try to please and it's still not received, you have to make a decision to go, I'm done trying to please. That's where I'm at.
But that's difficult for an entertainer, because part of the job is to please.
Not really.
Oh, really?
Depends on the level of entertainer that you are. My job is me putting myself out there 24/7. I'm authentic. I'm honest. I give you all of me. There is no version of me that's fake. The bonus of doing that is that when things like this happen, you're supposed to understand and know that I'm so true to me that there is no BS. So when I go, all right, yo, I remember this. I said sorry for that back then, but guess what? I'm gonna do it again. All right, I get it. Here's another one. Okay. All right, okay, y'all want another one? Here go another one. And it's still not, I'm going, well, that's not, I'm now compromising myself. At some point, you just have to be okay with you. I'm okay with me and all decisions that I've made in my life. This is the decision I've made to say, I'm over it.
All right, good for him. And the only criticism that I would have at all of Kevin Hart, he's an interesting guy for me as an entertainer, because years ago I wrote him off as just this goofy black comedian that was in stupid movies. And then I saw a little bit of his stand-up. And I remember one time he hosted Saturday Night Live, and he did this, you know, stream of consciousness comedy that was just brilliant. He talked about his wife in the house, and there was a raccoon that was in the driveway. I don't even remember the whole thing, but it was really, really funny. And the other thing I like about Kevin Hart is he is a really good businessman. He's a mogul in Hollywood. So my only criticism would be that he apologized in the first place, because I really wish we could get to a point where some folks have the intestinal fortitude. I get why he apologized, because he basically got forced into it and he wanted to make amends and, you know, say, look, this is going to be a distraction if I host the Oscars. But I just want more people to come forward and say, no, I'm not going to apologize for that, because most of you who are criticizing me are crazy. And you do not speak for the overwhelming number of gay people in this country or whatever minority you might represent. Because what's allowed to happen now, and this is mainly the media's fault, and I'm going to blame social media and all the blogs that are out there, because it doesn't take much for someone to get on their high horse and say, we don't like what you say because you're offensive. And we see it on a regular basis. And then And let me offer an example of what newspapers do. And we do it here in radio, too. We have to, and newspapers in particular, magazines, they have to get clicks on their stories. So when you see headlines at STL Today or the Washington Post or wherever, they want to put, we saw this over the holidays. Here's a perfect example. They want stories that get you riled up, that you'll send to friends, that you'll retweet, like when there's a criticism of... The Baby It's Cold Outside song. That's a good example, because then you got people writing columns about how horrific that is, which is another one of those ridiculous things. Well, look, the Washington Post, the New York Times, they want to put those stories up there, but they want clicks, right? They're going to get clicks. I'm not even convinced that most of the time they don't think that the person writing the piece is out of their flipping mind crazy, but they want the clicks. So they're going to give the crazy people the voice in the newspapers and on the blogs. And that's what happens. But I think somebody's got to push back. Kevin Hart's got to push back. People who support Louis C.K. I think Louis C.K. did some pretty disgusting things in the past. He's fessed up to him. But if you listen to the comedy that he did at that club a couple of weeks ago, whether or not it was an attempt at a comeback or not, some of it was pretty funny. Was some of it offensive to some people? It's too bad. Too flipping bad if your feelings were hurt by something a comedian said. That should have no bearing on what type of comedy the comedian does. And when Stephen Colbert says, you're an entertainer, you need to please people. No, you don't need to please everyone. You need to make sure that you have an audience, that you have a following, that you're pleasing your fans, and your fans are going to know what you do is genuine. So you don't have to worry about it. This is one of those things that gets me riled up more than, Dave's shaking his head, yeah, I know, more than anything else. The nonsense, it's beyond political correctness anymore. It's well beyond that. It's just lunacy.
It's Mark Reardon Now. Total Information PM starts at 4 with the information you need on KMOX.
I can't hear myself talk. I potted down. That's Radiolingual. Not to lose you, I put the wrong button down there. What was I going to say? Oh, the new Speaker of the Missouri House, Elijah Hart, coming up here in the next segment. I have not met him yet. Looking forward to getting to know him. The session starting officially yesterday. We're joined right now by a member of the St. Louis County Council, Mark Harder, with us. How are you, Mark?
Hey, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. Let's talk about the county-city merger. How about that?
Well, that seems to be the topic of the week or the month.
Oh, I think it's going to be the topic of the next maybe 19 months if things at Better Together go the way that they want it. But you obviously have some issues here. It's a little strange because this plan has not been rolled out officially. But are you going to introduce something in the council to address the question of whether folks here in this area support this potential plan?
Yes. Next Tuesday night at our council meeting, I will be introducing a bill that will support a non-binding referendum that will be placed on a future election, and it will give basically the county residents, all the county residents, a opportunity to express their support for some kind of merger or not. And we need to just rip this Band-Aid and just find out what the people of St. Louis County feel about any kind of merger proposal.
So if that were to pass, what would the path be to get it on an actual ballot, and how soon could that happen?
Well, it would be the next election, which at this point, because of timing, will most likely be April of next year. And so we still have to go through, we'll have some hearings, and it has to have its three readings and so on. But that's why we won't get on this April, but the next election cycle will be April of next year at the earliest.
Are you aware of, I don't know if you've ever been briefed about this, I had the county executive on, he knows quite a bit about the plan, but I don't know about other members of the county council. Have you guys ever had meetings with Better Together, been briefed about this so far?
No, they've kept us in the dark, as well as they have many of the citizens in this community, and they've picked this strategy of leaking this out so that they can dominate the news cycle for the last week now. So once we get the details, but this isn't about the details. This is about whether the voters of St. Louis City and St. Louis County have the right to vote on their form of government going forward. And that's my biggest issue with the plan, whether it's a good plan or a bad plan, the first step is, should the voters of St. Louis County, who are paying the freight for their lifestyle and the communities that they live in, have the right to vote for this or not, or vote against this plan going in the future, and not someone from Joplin or Dent County or Blue Springs, Missouri, or something like that, that why should they have a say in the way the people of this region are governed?
Yeah, well, the folks from Better Together have an answer for that. I'll let them deliver it in a couple of weeks. As I sat down with them this week, I'm skeptical about the way that they're doing this, too. And some of this gets confusing, Mark. I don't know how much you've dug into it. But, for example, former Senator Lamping tells me, because I think what they feel is you have to change the Constitution. That's why you have to go statewide. But he says that the Constitution allows for a merger where the city and the county would have to vote yes, and then a board of freeholders is appointed. They put a plan forward, they map it out, then the city and the county votes again. Now, that's a long process. My guess is that even if that is an option, the folks at Better Together see a cleaner path to having this pass right now. But then you risk the allegations of a coup, which is what's happening right now.
Well, and the people of this region need to be involved in this, and this is one way, and we'll get it on the ballot, and we'll find out. Maybe they'll vote for it, and maybe they'll vote against it. But we'll see how this goes.
Mark, is it possible, though, when you hear the details, and, I was privy to some of them, but not all of them, and when folks in St. Louis County and St. Louis City hear exactly what's going on, I've been told Better Together says they want it to be transparent from now on after they release the plan. They want the questions to be asked. They'll answer the questions. We'll have a vigorous debate. Is it possible that throughout the course of many months, a year and a half, really, if you think about the campaign, now they'd have to gather signatures and get that on the ballot. The way this would work right now is that voters throughout the state would vote on this plan in November of next year, which would be the presidential year. But isn't it possible that they could roll this plan out, do a sales job, and have people turn it around on this in St. Louis County in particular, saying, okay, maybe this is the way to go?
Sure. I mean, anything is possible. But what I'm saying is that the people of this region should have a choice in how they are governed, and that's what this resolution will try to flesh out at this point. You know, it may go the other direction. That's always the risk. But I feel confident from the people I've talked to and the polling that we've seen on the other side is that the people of St. Louis County and St. Louis City don't want this type of merger. Now, or should we have some consolidation? Yes, I think there's probably things we can do in consolidation. I think there's issues that we can work together on, and we have been. This is, in my opinion, a nuclear choice here, and I think we could go at it a different way and get a better result.
You said, and we were talking yesterday about this, but you've gotten a fair amount of feedback from other elected officials and folks who live in the county, right?
Correct.
And
you're going to see maybe an alternative plan coming out once this plan has been released, if it ever is, and we'll talk about it. And there'll be people that actually work in the field of government to look at it and say, this might work and this won't. And we got to go that route. Right now, this is one group and one very deep investor's opinion of which way this community should be governed, and we need to have multiple opinions, in my opinion.
Take the issue of the statewide vote out of the equation for just a moment, and just look at what's being proposed, what we know about it right now, what you know about it. What would be the biggest objection to the framework for the merger that you would have?
Well, I think creating this mega Cook County model is dangerous, and we, especially in my district, which is West St. Louis County, we have very good municipalities in this area that do a very good job and are very frugal and deliver the services that the people of these communities want and need, and do it in a way that's cost effective. I can't say that for every municipality, but I would hope that they all work in the same model and they do a very good job. And to make that all go away by a stroke of a pen or a vote is a disservice to the people that are willing to pay for it if there is excess, and the people who live in these communities that you live in and I live in across the region. If there's bad players, sure, they need to be weeded out, and the people of those communities need to do that. That's the people they voted for. That's the government they voted for. And they need to have a place at the table to make that happen.
What's the reaction? I don't know how much you've had a chance to visit with other members of the county council when it comes to this proposal. I would anticipate you have a fair amount of support on this.
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, we supported this. I sent you the resolution that we approved back in 2017 that basically said any discussion or vote over this merger or any kind of merger plan would have to come to St. Louis County and St. Louis City first. And we unanimously approved, as well as a huge majority of the municipalities in St. Louis County approved that resolution. And it was well received in Jefferson City at the time that this is the type of vote we should have, not a statewide vote.
Mark Carter, County Councilman, let us know how this progresses. I appreciate your time this afternoon. Thanks, Mark.
Will do, Mark. Thanks.
You know, I understand where he's coming from. I absolutely do. And, you know, that's why I expressed concern from the very beginning about just the process here. But I guess I would also say, to a certain extent, we need to wait and see what the plan is. There may be some things in this plan that throw up red flags even more so than they have already. I have not seen all of it. There may be some things, if you can convince people, for example, in Mark Carter's district in West St. Louis County, that there's a tax benefit here to them, especially with property taxes, that's going to change some minds. But that's only one part of the equation. We'll continue, obviously, for the next 19 months, if not more. I guess it'll be 20. I think I'm doing the math wrong. Really more like 20 months. Before that vote in November of next year.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Premature trigger finger there with my bumper music. Apologize for that. 3:36 at the Voice of St. Louis. We have an audio cut of the day coming up tomorrow. No Reardon Roundtable. I'm out of town Friday and Monday, back on Tuesday. By that time, do you think the government shutdown will be over? I don't think so. My guess is going to linger for a little while. We're joined by the new Speaker of the Missouri House, Elijah Haar, who is a Republican from Springfield this afternoon. I've never had the opportunity to either meet or interview him. At least I don't think we've met, Elijah, have we?
I don't think so.
Yeah, well, welcome to KMOX. How are you?
Thank you very much for having me. I'm good.
Is it true? Let's throw a couple of Q&As at you. Are you the youngest Speaker of the Missouri House in history?
So I'm actually not. I think there was one that was younger back in the 30s, but I'm the youngest in the country right now.
Youngest in the country right now. You're 36 years old.
Yeah, very fortunate. This is probably partially a product of term limits. We're getting younger and younger legislators. There's a guy that got elected named Dirk Deaton. He's actually the youngest legislator in over 100 years in Missouri. He's 24 years old.
Right? Oh, wow. Where is he?
Yeah. He is from McDonald County in extreme southwest Missouri. Basically, his county is borders both Oklahoma and Arkansas. But, yeah, he's 24 years old.
How old do you have to be elected in the House? You have to be just 21, or is there another cutoff?
Actually, 24 is the cutoff.
Oh, there you go.
24 in 3 months, and there was a legislator about 102 years ago who got elected at the age of 24 in 2 months.
You know, this would have been a disaster for constituents when I lived in Boone County, Missouri. But many years ago, this goes back like 30 years when I was doing radio there, not quite 30 years. I was recruited by Professor Rick Hardy at the University of Missouri, late Rick Hardy, to run for a legislative seat. And it was a serious inquiry at the time. I couldn't do it because I wouldn't have had the opportunity to feed my family or myself, because I would have had to have pulled myself off the radio for a few months. But that could have been just terrible for everything if I was elected at some point, Elijah. Thank God that didn't happen.
Just think it could be the representative, Mark Rudinger.
No, we don't want that. All right, so one question about what's going on with the session so far. It just started, but we're hearing that there's already filibustering going on in the other chamber. Can you confirm, deny, and explain that?
If there is, I'm not aware of it, but I know that, you know, and candidly, I've been off the grid the last couple hours because I was out of the Capitol. I'm actually almost home. We had a really good first day, and then today was a technical session. What we'll do next week is we'll assign the committees, and then we'll have the state of the state on Wednesday, and then we'll really start hitting stride after that.
All right, so what does hitting stride mean? What exactly are we going to work on as priorities this legislative session?
You know, one of the things what I've told everybody is that last year, despite all the problems we had a very successful policy session. You know, biggest income tax cut in history. We're going to take our business tax rate to the second lowest in the nation. We did some really great things last year. This year, we're going to kind of change focus. There's going to be a lot of discussion about education reform, workforce development, and then obviously we're focusing on passing a balanced budget, which the Republicans have done every time they've been in office. They pass a balanced budget. They've not required a tax increase to do it. We spend within our means.
And here's a question, because in all those descriptions you just gave, I didn't really hear infrastructure in roads. And of course, we just had the ballot issue that went down. It wasn't a surprise to me. I am a firm believer that this is a pretty important topic in the state of Missouri. And I don't have a lot of faith in leaders. I'm not criticizing you, but just that this can be solved because we've kicked the can so much so far.
Well, first of all, criticism is healthy. Leaders like us need to be criticized by the people from time to time to keep us humble. But, you know, here's the thing. Two times in the last 4 years, a gas and a sales tax have been put on the ballot. The voters rejected it. They've been very clear that they do not want to spend any more money on our roads. So what we need to do is figure out, with the amount of money that we bring in as a state, how do we appropriate that money differently to fix the ongoing infrastructure problem? And the second way is, and this is not nothing we have control over, but you know, if the Democrats in Congress decide that they want to work with President Trump, the one area of overlap that both sides have said they want to do is a federal infrastructure package. And Missouri, with I-44, I-49, and I-70, we're uniquely positioned that we would be a pretty big recipient of any federal infrastructure monies.
Yeah, I think we got to keep our fingers crossed on that, because that would be important. And I personally think that should have been priority number one for President Trump when he came in office. But here we are two years later. I don't know if they can get that done this year, though, with the politics in Washington. It certainly would help a lot of states, including Missouri.
I think a lot of the question on that is, do the Democrats want to spend 2 years just opposing Trump, or do they actually want to pass anything? If they want to pass anything, that's the one that I think they have the best opportunity to actually move.
And when you're talking about education reform, describe what your vision of education reform would be.
So first, I think you have to start from the premise of what's the best for the children. You know, yesterday when I gave my acceptance speech, one of the things I said is that what we have to do when we talk about education is figure out how to make sure that every child in the state gets a world-class education no matter their zip code. It shouldn't matter if you're born in inner city St. Louis, if you're born in the suburbs, if you're born in a rural area. You should get the best possible education. And whatever it takes to get that done, I think is probably a focus that we should have. And sometimes we lose track of that focus. So that's one of the things, and I don't know if that's going to be the expansion of charters. I don't know if that's going to be education savings accounts. I don't know if that's going to be something else. But I think those are discussions we need to have to make sure that we give those kids the exact same opportunities, no matter where in the state they live.
Yeah, you know, and I'm a school choice fan, and I know there are a lot of people who aren't, and I don't know where the governor is. I talked to him a little bit a few weeks ago about education, but I would hope that he would be a fan of true reform, because what we have with failing schools, I think, is the same old, and you throw money at situations and they don't get solved. You need, I mean, maybe not in the House. You have 47 Democrats. You have the supermajority in the House, but you would need Democrats, certainly in the Senate, to come aboard and support education reform, wouldn't you?
Well, and you do, but also I think, you know, traditionally there's a lot of Democrats, especially those from
that represent areas with failing schools that truly believe in education reform.
I think they do. Yeah.
And here's the thing: we have some really amazing public schools in this state. My oldest two kids, the ones that are in school, they both go to a public school in Springfield. It's one of the best elementary schools in town. I'm very fortunate for that. But there are just some areas where those public schools are failing, and that's not fair to those children just because of where their geography is and where they live, that they're stuck in a school like that. And so that is something that we're going to spend a lot of time discussing this year.
So, you know, I mentioned this, I think yesterday, the day before, I'm hopping on an airplane tomorrow morning to go to L.A. for a movie awards show. And last year when I did that, almost to the date, I got off the plane at LAX and turned my phone on, and my phone had exploded because it was just 1 year ago, and so much has happened since then. Then the Eric Greitens story broke, and that obviously created a bit of a tumultuous session last year. So calmer waters as we enter 2019, I would say.
You know, first of all, it's almost a cultural shift dealing with Governor Parson than it was dealing with Eric Greitens. And part of that is not so much just the scandals, but also just the way that they worked with the legislature. Now, Governor Greitens was always very combative. It was always us versus them. Parson has been a House member. He's been a Senate member. He understands kind of how the legislative process works. And so he's been very cordial in trying to bring us in all of his decisions, meeting with us early on the budget and on policy proposals. It's just a different working relationship than we had with the prior governor.
Elijah Haar, the new Speaker of the Missouri House. You know, Richardson was always invited to come on the Reardon Roundtable. Elijah, I don't know if you ever get a chance to listen to the Reardon Roundtable. It's a resume enhancer if you're on the show. And you are more than welcome. I know you're busy during the session, but we'll do the open invitation to you because you do have to drive here through St. Louis, so hopefully you listen every once in a while. But open invite to come on the Reardon Roundtable. You would not be the youngest member of the Reardon Roundtable. I think John Gaskin has that distinction. But you'd be, you know, I think you'd be a good fit.
Well, I'd love to be on sometime. I appreciate the opportunity. You know, one of the benefits of being one of the younger members is, last night for the legislative ball, we brought in a 90s cover band. We kind of changed out for more of the traditional old school songs, a little bit of a younger.
Nice.
I think it was fun. It was a really great opportunity last night.
Was the Attorney General singing hip hop by any chance?
We did not have General Schmidt in there singing, but you know we should have done that. We should just
he could do that. He could do that, man. He. I'm telling you, if you put him on the spot with a microphone, I'm pretty sure the guy is multi-talented, which is why he's the official state office holder of my show. Representative Elijah Haar, the Speaker. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Hey, thank you for having me on.
All right, we'll talk soon. 3:46, audio cut of the day coming up. Traffic with Roger as well. Basically, you told us just a few moments ago that you're going to be the guy doing donuts tomorrow night when it's snowing, right?
Well, I just like to see.
It is fun to drive the snow. I'm with you, though. I kind of like it. I mean, if you have a front-wheel drive car, or a rear-wheel drive car, that's probably not the ideal thing.
I'm a big fan of rallying, which in Europe is a big deal, where the cars are like sliding sideways. So snow gives you the chance to sort of practice that stuff, if you know a place safely to do it, obviously.
I always harken back, and I think I've told this story on the air before. Back when I was here in high school, I might have been in college at the time, but maybe in high school, and I went to the Chesterfield Mall theaters, which used to be, as you remember, if I remember correctly, it was outside of. Didn't those theaters used to be outside?
Yeah, they were outside the Dillard's there.
They weren't really in the mall.
No, it was a separate building.
So we, I think my sisters were with me, or my brother, maybe we were all going to see a movie, and it had snowed, and there was snow in the parking lot. We were goofing off, and I gunned it. And I mean, the cars just started. This was like a big 1975 Chevy Caprice boat. And the car just started, because I must have gunned it pretty good, and it just started spinning around in circles. And luckily, there was no danger outside of just the motion, which sort of gave me fear. But in other words, we weren't about to hit another car or a tree or anything like that. But it was a little daunting, and I think my siblings probably thought I was crazy at the time.
Yeah, well, the fun for me is just being able to get around or watching people. I don't mind driving on the road when people go sliding by because I know how to drive carefully.
Yes.
And I bet everybody else that's, you know, foot to the floor no matter what.
Well, good news is I think that it's happening on a Friday into a Saturday.
Yeah,
right?
So it's fun on the...
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Roger's back here in just about 6 minutes.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Let me do a little bit of a round robin. We have new audio in since I hit the air at 2 o'clock this afternoon. The president made a bunch of comments this morning about the shutdown and about the border and the wall or the fence or whatever we're calling it right now. Then he went to the border. He was in Texas and said this.
I'm honored to be in McAllen, Texas, with the heroes of Border Patrol. And they are heroes. You know, you have have so much, Border Patrol, ICE, and law enforcement generally. You take so much heat, you take so much abuse from people that don't know what they're talking about. When I say Mexico is going to pay for the wall, that's what I mean. Mexico's paying for the wall. And I didn't mean, please write me a check. I mean, very simply, they're paying for it in the trade deal. The wall or the steel barrier, they can have any name they want, but we have to have it, and it's going to happen. Our plan includes drug detection technology at our ports, more officers and agents, far more, more beds to house the influx of unlawful migrants, medical support, closing the disastrous loopholes. But Congress, as you know, the Democrats are holding us up because they don't want it. They think it's good politically. I think it's a disaster for them politically. But I'm not doing it for politics. I'm doing it because it's right. I even hear certain members of Congress, the Democrats, are saying we better get this thing going. This isn't working out too well for us because nobody's going to win the battle of strong borders and no crime, as opposed to open borders and crime doesn't matter. Because that's what they're saying, crime doesn't matter.
The government shut down because Democrats will not fund border security. Plain and simple. And again, more than just the walls.
Blaming the Democrats for the shutdown. That's the president at the border in Texas earlier today. Much more on this and all the other news of the day coming up at 4 o'clock. Total Information PM kicks off next on KMOX.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.